And here we are. Welcome into another episode of the Patriots Podcast. I'm Sean, he's JJ.
Hello.
Hey, you sound happy, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Off-season
I'm sure
2020.
I sound good because of this great new podcast studio from You Do It Electronics, better than Sean over there. But,
man, look at you with the plugs. Very good. Very good.
Yep.
The absolute opposite of the way the Patriots ended the season.
Horrible.
I love that we both, this is a running theme for a couple weeks, is that the team can look bad, and then, like, right after a game, we'll be like, ah, this is terrible, this is not looking good, this is not going to end well, and then by the end of the week, or like right before the next game, you already talked yourselves into them winning.
I think that's everyone does that. I think that's just like a natural, you know, I feel like for this game, like really last year kind of threw everything off, because last year, you know, you lose to Pittsburgh late, you lose to Miami on that ridiculous play, you sneak into a bye game even though you lost at 11 and a bye week, even though you lost at 11-5. And this year, that was all coming together. It was even an easier path than last year, and all of a sudden you lost the bye, and it's like, you know, everything you thought you were building towards offensively. You know, oh, maybe N'Keal Harry can do this. Oh, all that takes is if Mohamed Sanu could wake up for like four catches. You know, the running game is looking good. The offensive line, but all that stuff we thought was going well, all of a sudden kind of just wasn't going well. You know, it was like none of it was as good as we thought. It was all as bad as it looked the whole time, or worse. I mean, that's what essentially this game, everything, it was a culmination of the year, I feel like, just how it went down.
Yeah, yeah, essentially. I mean, the defense did enough to win, the offense didn't do enough.
And, yeah, I mean,
that's the story. Well,
and I thought the defense was fine. I mean, some people are ragging on the defense, but, you know, they let up 14. I mean, that pick six has nothing to do with them with 10 seconds left anyways, whatever. They gave up 14, but the other thing about the defense, too, is they couldn't stop the run. And I know that it only let up 14 points, but it took a lot of time off the clock, and it put more pressure on the offense. As they hit, well, I mean, they only had three real potential drives in the second half. That was it.
Say three?
I think it was three.
That doesn't seem right. They, yeah, that's...
It might have been four, but I mean, they well, the last drive they had came with like no time left on the clock, I think.
Well, yeah, that one doesn't count. But they had one, two, three, four drives before that.
Did they have four drives? Okay, four.
Yeah. I know if the
so it's not a lot.
The defensive game plan, like you said, they gave up 14 points before the pick six, but that was great. I mean, if you told us last week they were going to give up 14, I'd be like, great, that'll work.
Yeah, fine.
That'll totally
fine.
Work. And it was a very frustrating defense to watch, because they were able to run the ball so well, and because it was just like, can you just slow them down? Can you just put one more person in there? And eventually they were able to slow them down with a couple adjustments that I think Collinsworth did a good job elucidating. But they really didn't lose that much in the time possession battle. I mean, Tennessee had the ball 31 minutes. I know it kind of felt like they had the ball a lot, but they really didn't. And the Patriots still had nine meaningful drives. I say meaningful because the last two weren't.
Yeah.
And it was – the defensive game plan was frustrating, but it worked. And what my biggest problem with it was, they start out in the 3-4, and they have Dietrich Wise as the five technique.
Yeah, we're talking about.
Holy
crap.
This third game. And it's – I'm blowing our minds, because the dude is winding up on his back on half the plays. The other half, he's behind the yard to gain line. I mean, he's 5-10
yards. I mean, he was like 5-10 yards down the line. He was getting double teamed. I mean, I understand, okay, the guy's getting double teamed. He was on the strong side. He was the strong side 3-4 D end at 265 pounds, taking a double team against one of the best offensive lines in the league. It's like, what are you doing, letting him be there?
Yeah, we have a better player. His name's Adam Butler. He's got 40 pounds on Dietrich Wise, and he's known to be good in these situations.
Yeah,
he did it not too long ago.
I don't know, and even the adjustment they made really wasn't to go to Adam Butler. They just kept putting in Dietrich Wise, and I mean, that first drive, literally, they ran up his hole I want to say, you know, if there were 10 runs that drive, they ran out of up that hole 9 times.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the numbers were, it was like every, like, besides one time. That was killing me. And then, you know, the defense we run going into the half where they scored there and got the touchdown, you know, it was the same type of thing. We were just running the wrong defense. You know, we ran this pass heavy, two deep safety attack, and they just ran the ball right down our throat because we didn't have the personnel on the field and we didn't adjust, and they scored a touchdown. It's like, well, isn't that the whole point of this preventative defense, is to not score a touchdown? And they scored.
Yeah. So that was at the first half. They came out in the 3-4. They were getting gashed in it. I should make the correction. It was Tony Romo on the call. I remember now because he was taking so much glee in this possibly being Patriots' last game with Brady. But right in the first half, Romo's saying, why don't they go to the 6-1 like they did in the Super Bowl, which is exactly what they ended up doing, and that ended up working.
Right.
And so they start in the 3-4. It's not working. What they're doing is tackling them 7 yards downfield. They go to the 6-1. And now they're tackling him either at the line of scrimmage. You know, it's a 2 yard gain, it's a zero, it's a no gain, or it's 10 yards down the field,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. What's the difference? What's the difference if you get him stopped twice and then he goes for 10 versus him going for 6 or 7 every single time? And the delay on making that adjustment was frustrating. I think the reason they did that was because they were worried about the play action pass. Which is great. Yeah, you keep your 4 guys deep, whatever. You play 7 guys in the box. But if you go 6-1 up front, you still have 4 guys deep.
Yeah, I don't know what took so long with that. I don't know.
I think they were worried about if the line gets beat and then the middle linebacker gets sealed off, then you might have a big Derrick Henry run. And yeah, that's something to be concerned about. But you're getting gashed. I mean, make that adjustment. Eventually they did, and then it's weird that they went away from it at the very end of the first half. And really, that ends up being the difference in the game. This is a story that's been going on for weeks now. The end of the first half, they've been getting crushed.
Crushed. I
mean, you go back to the Bills game. They're driving. They end up getting stopped on fourth down. The Bills turn around, get a touchdown right back.
Mm-hmm.
The Miami game, they get score, stop, and then they kneel on the ball instead of trying to drive it. They fuck that up. And then this game... They're driving. They end up having to give the ball back to Tennessee. Tennessee goes down, gets a touchdown right before half. 75 yards on all Derrick Henry. By the way, what the hell was going on with Josh Bailey? Why are you punting the ball into the end zone so much? But they
yeah, he didn't have a good game either. I mean, no one really had a good game.
Some people did.
A little bit. Not great, though.
Some of the defensive players did. But, yeah, that defensive game plan was frustrating. However, that all being said, they did enough. They turned the ball over. Daron Harmon with the interception. They got a bunch of stops. They gave up effectively 0 points in the second half. The defense did give up 0 points in the second half.
Yep.
Gave the ball back. And, you know, as the story has been for the last 2 months, this offense just has no juice.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about the defense I wanted to mention was tight ends. Chung got hurt, and you coming with the other, they essentially didn't have a passing game. I mean, they threw for 72 yards, but when they needed it, they had to have it. There was I think it was the second touchdown was that dude Fursker.
Yeah.
And then that big third down play was also to this dude, you know, at the end of the game to basically kill the clock on us, was this other the dude Fursker again. He had 2 catches for 23 yards and basically made the 2 biggest catches of the game.
Yeah,
both AJ times. Brown had 1 catch for 4 yards. You know, we were all worried about him. The rest of that dude, their real tight end, Jonnu Smith, had 1 catch. I mean, it wasn't – they didn't even care to throw. It wasn't even like it was their game plan.
Well, we were begging them not to and giving them so much success on the ground that they didn't have to. And, yeah, Ferkser was going against – both of those catches were against Terrence Brooks. They were both on third down. And we played man coverage, and we go, can our backup beat your backup? And it wasn't the case.
No.
Your guy won both times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty brutal.
Pretty
brutal.
Yeah, now offensively, this is – what's weird to me about this is we're like, oh, this offense, they can't do anything. They're terrible. They can't move the chains, yada, yada, yada. The amount of 3-and-outs this offense has is extremely minimal. They almost always get a first down.
Yeah, they can move the ball.
The problem is they can't either get it into the red zone enough times and they can't convert in the red zone. Those are two separate problems. But the getting it into scoring position, which was the problem in this game, because say what you want, but you can't get into field goal range once in the second half in a one-point game. Yeah, that's a big problem.
With a smaller defense who's really, really wasn't doing anything extraordinary out there.
No.
I mean, part of the problem with that was our field position. They were killing us with the field position. They won the special teams battle, field position battle, whatever you want to call it. We started all of our drives. I mean, we really didn't get, I think the one we started around the 20, you know, outside of the 25 was the pick, which was probably at the 30. I mean, it wasn't, you know.
We actually had two. There was the Mohamed Sanu had a punt return.
Oh, he had a return.
Right into midfield.
That's true. You're right. So, I mean, but not the greatest field position. But regardless, I mean, they would get a couple first downs and then they'd punt it. They'd get a couple first downs. They couldn't get a go over midfield. They once got to the, I think it was the 47. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of it was drops, you know, in the second half. You look at it, there was N'Keal Harry had two bad drops. Julian Edelman probably had the worst drop of the game. N'Keal Harry's two drops, I think, came on the same drive. But he had two drops, which basically effectively killed that drive. You had Julian Edelman that dropped a pass on that last real drive in the fourth quarter before they got the ball back. And that was on a second and six.
Second and four.
And then the next play, was the next play Watson?
No, the next play was they did a three-man rush, and both edge rushers got to Brady. Brady, for some reason, didn't step up that time. He throws it short of Dorsett.
So Edelman dropped that. That would have kept the drive going, and you still had a third down there, but you know, clearly that didn't work out well. There was, you know, and then one of the drives, Watson had a great catch over the middle, but Shaq Mason was down the field like 3 yards over where he should have been. So they call that, which is just a bummer. I mean,
this whole list of plays that if they went the other way, this game is different. And you just named like half of them.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. I mean, in the second half, we just couldn't make the play. Like everything, someone said it. I was listening to someone on it, and they had put it the right way. It was basically for this offense to score, everything had to work.
Yeah.
The offensive line had to be playing perfect. The receivers had to make perfect blocks and great catches. I mean, it wasn't like there wasn't any like, oh, like that didn't look great, but they still got it done.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, and we've had that before. And this year, and you know, all year, it was basically like they had to fight so hard and work so hard for everything to look great. And even when it looked great, it's still the whole thing had to be great for them to just score. Not even a win, but just to score. Which is really hard to do. So, I mean, and then, you know, that between that Watson thing, the two Harry drops, the Edelman drop, the first drive, I think it was the first or second drive. So those three things killed three drives. And then you had one more drive. And the last drive, that drive, Edelman basically couldn't get out of his break. Brady put the ball, I thought, right where it should be, and it was just hit off Edelman's fingers. Now, I don't want to give... It was the first or second drive of the second half. I don't remember if it was the first or the second, but it was the first. It was one of those two, and it was a third down. I want to say it was a third down and 10, and it was Edelman did a little out to the sidelines, and it just bounced off his fingers. I mean, if he caught it, it would have been a great catch, but I feel like Brady put the ball where it was supposed to be, and Edelman didn't get to the spot. That's kind of what it looked like when I went back and took a look at it. Mm-hmm. So you have four drives there where just, you know, penalty – several drops, and that's it. I mean, that's all it takes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, this is pretty much what I'm getting at, is that the offense, almost every single series is getting into a third down. And then it's a coin flip at best if they're going to convert this third down.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, they don't get a first down on first down. They don't convert a second down into a new set of downs. They get into these third downs all the time, and then they're just not able to get chunk yardage. They don't get those 20-plus yard plays. The only way they're really getting it is in the screen game and defensive pass interference. That's the only way they're moving the ball down in big chunks.
Mm-hmm.
We saw in this game, the screen game worked a few times. I mean, Burkhead got down to the one-yard line on the opening drive. James White caught one for, I mean, it must have been like 25 yards. Looks like it's 29-yarder for James White on that opening drive on the screenplay, and then, you know, that's really it. That's all we could get. Ben Watson had that 21-yarder on also on the opening drive in a really great catch that he made. Brady put it in the only spot it could be. Watson,
and he should have had that other one, yeah.
Yeah, other deep one, but this is exactly what we said. Everything has to work perfect, and then when it doesn't, they'll always screw it up. That play, nobody got open, but they only sent three guys, so Brady bought a bunch of time, chucks the ball deep, and then we screw it up. We make that Shaq Mason mistake. We talked about this during the game a little bit. We've talked about it. I mean, everybody is. Is Brady the same player? He's 42. He's going to be 43 the next year. I saw a guy that did everything he could. I mean, how many times did you see a play where I just think of there was a third down, I believe, in the first half, but he throws it to N'Keal Harry on a comeback route on the right sideline. And Harry is not even close to open, not even 1 inch close to open. But neither is anybody else. Brady puts it in the only spot to give the guy a chance to win. He doesn't, and then you punt. He throws the ball. He hits Edelman in the hands. We already talked about that one. Third and 15. He does the check down screen to James White. They sniff it out because, oh yeah, obviously we're going to run a screen on third and 15.
Mm-hmm. Brady was 20 for 37, but the ball was, you know, the ball was where it was supposed to be almost all the time. Not every time, but most of the time.
Yeah, and this is a guy with an elbow injury and a foot injury.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the ball didn't have a perfect amount of zip, but on that Hail Mary, he still got it to the end zone, which I didn't think he could still do from where they were on the field. The interception wasn't his fault at all. It was a good throw. I mean, he had a couple questionable throws. If he, you know, put it in a little better spot, maybe the guy could have got off running a little better, something like this or that. But overall, he can still throw the ball and get it where it needs to be.
And move in the pocket.
I mean, he was 20 for 37, and we just named, like, four drops.
Yeah, exactly.
So right off the bat.
Hail Mary, plus how much at the end of the first half was probably, like, three or four incompletions. God damn it, why didn't N'Keal Harry stop running on that?
Yeah, stop trying. I mean, right there should have been at least 5 to maybe even 10 more completions if, you know, other people played around him, which would have made that, you know, his throwing percentage a lot better. The receivers, I think between Harry, Sanu, and Dorsett, Brady was like 4 of 14 or something for that catches.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Sanu was 1 for 11, and the other one, he had 5 targets. One of them was picked off because it went off his hands. I mean, we were all hoping, you know, Logan Ryan's a good player, but you would have thought that he could have had some kind of jump on him. Logan Ryan is kind of a press guy, so if you get behind him or if you're physical with him, maybe you can beat him here and there. Sanu just doesn't look good. I don't know. I mean, I was never impressed with him anywhere else, but I feel, you know, he was always a 700-800 yard player. He had like $150 with us. I mean, and then the playoffs come and you're like, everyone's like, oh yeah, he's ready. And it's like,
not even close.
What the hell was that? You know, 1 for 11.
His first game with the Pats against the Ravens, he had like 9 or 10 catches.
He had 8 catches for 80 yards.
What the heck happened since then? How do you start off so fast?
That's what nobody understands. And I, you know, we gave up a second round pick for this guy.
I mean, when we traded it, you thought it was going to be in the 60s. This is going to be a low 50s pick.
It's a nice pick.
Yeah.
And this guy gave us effectively nothing. You could have got the same production out of undrafted free agent rookie, what's his name?
Jacoby Myers.
Myers, as he did from him.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, he's more of a threat, and Jacoby Myers wouldn't have been seeing Logan Ryan as much as Sanu did. But absolutely, when you look at what Emmanuel Sanders has been able to do,
That's what I want to ask you. If we had Emmanuel Sanders on this team, I don't know if the cap would have worked or whatever. I don't know. But if Emmanuel Sanders was here instead of Sanu, you think we won that game?
That's a good question. Probably.
I think we would have scored a touchdown. I think we could have scored another touchdown.
But we would have been able to get into field goal range once more.
Right. I mean, that's ridiculous that's the difference. I know. Harry, they went to – I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say the biggest problem with this offense is people weren't getting open. And Emmanuel Sanders, he's got limitations.
But he gets open.
He gets open. He can get hurt. Maybe he doesn't give you anything in the run game, but he can separate.
Right. N'Keal Harry had 7 targets. They were really trying to get him going. I didn't like the play calling all game, and I'll get to that in a second. But N'Keal Harry, you know, 7 targets. They're trying to get on the ball. He really couldn't do anything. They gave him only one end around. I don't know why. We knew that worked. We faked it once, and we gave it to him once. And it's like, why wasn't that more in the game plan? And I'll get to that more in a second. And then Dorsett, you know, 4 targets. Dorsett, I don't know what happened to him, but it seems like when the weather goes below 60 degrees, the guy just turns into a dumpster fire. He can't play. And it's ridiculous.
Kind of, but kind of not. What's really weird about Philip Dorsett, when you think back to the Jaguars AFC Championship game 2 years ago, he made like 2 really big catches in that game.
Right.
The Danny Amendola game. And then the Chiefs playoff game last year, which was like 10 degrees in the AFC Championship game, he catches a touchdown pass in that game.
It's true.
He's shown up in big spots. And then this year, I don't know what's going on with him. It's not like he's slower. He's fine.
No,
he doesn't make plays on the ball.
And it's not like, you know, earlier in the season where he had to be the number 2 or whatever. He was the number 4 or the number 3 on this current team in this playoff game. He was not the guy. He did not have to be the guy. He could have been that guy again from those other past years where, oh, Philip Dorsett, you know, don't let him, you know, get you. Don't forget about him type of guy. And he'd make a play or two. This game, I mean, it was terrible. The run game, actually, I thought was pretty effective. I mean, 22 for 98 yards overall is fine. What happened in the second half is we stopped going to it. We tried to go to it. It wasn't effective. Landon Roberts got hurt. And Sony Michel can clearly not run behind if he doesn't have a fullback.
Yeah, he's a fullback runner.
He needs a fullback to run, which is ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. What are you talking
about? It's pretty ridiculous.
Some guys are like that.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like
Derrick Henry. And he does pretty damn well.
He's not Derrick Henry.
Dalvin Cook is like that too. He's a fullback runner. There's a lot of really good running backs in the NFL that require a fullback, and that's fine. But when you lose your top 2 fullbacks, and then you're trying to teach a defensive player how to do it, and he's whiffing on every single block on the edge, he can.
Yeah, I mean, we're all excited about him too.
I know we're stepping over each other right now, but we're trying to say the same thing. He can hit people, but he doesn't set up blocks nicely. And when it's on the edge and there's a little bit of uncertainty about who he's supposed to pick up, he ends up picking up nobody.
Right. And he did okay for a part of the game. And then, you know, on the end, the goal line was terrible. I mean, basically, when we got the goal, they stopped us on the goal line. That was it.
We were still up 6.
We were still up, but it was just almost like, oh my God, they can't punch it in. Are they going to be able to do this? That, you know what I mean? Are they going to be able to pull this game off? And it was basically no. They got, you know, they didn't have it. And it was kind of, you can kind of saw it on that drive. It was like, couldn't they do anything else? Can't you just throw a wide receiver screen there to Harry and let him fall into the end zone, for Christ's sake?
Yeah, this is definitely something I wanted to talk about is the short yardage game. It's an epidemic around the NFL, but the Patriots are among the worst teams.
We are, but you're right. A lot of teams are going to trick plays and random shit on short yardage, which is amazing to me.
It is, right? And I'm watching the Vikings-Saints game. I was like, can anybody pick up a single yard? The Vikings almost lost that game a couple times because they couldn't do anything at the goal line. And then eventually they use offensive pass interference to get the win. Oh, he did it! But the Patriots' game plan on 3rd-and-1s was always, we're going to line up in a heavy personnel set. If you guys put defenders in both A gaps and both B gaps, then you're taking away the QB sneak, and in that case, we're going to run it off tackle.
Mm-hmm.
If you take away off tackle, we're going to do the QB sneak.
Right.
That was it. That was their whole game plan. And then in this game, and with this offensive line and fullback combination in particular, mainly I'm talking about Ted Karras and Alanda Roberts, they weren't able to win on those off-tackle plays. I mean, I know the tackles were getting driven back sometimes. The Titans were really setting the edge well. But the real problem was Rashawn Evans, a middle linebacker, was completely unaccounted for, and he's a freak athlete, and he was just making every play on those off-tackles. And Ted Karras wasn't able to get to that second level. Landon Roberts wasn't able to look backwards and seal that off.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept getting shut down on that, yet in this goal-to-go situation, they run off-tackle left 3 consecutive times.
Three times in a row.
It's like, at the very least, can we get an advantage on the snap count? We're playing at home. Let's use a hard count, or let's use a quick snap, or let's have a guy in jet motion and have their eyes diverted or their timing thrown off with that. How about, well, I mean, we were talking about this during the game. How about running some sort of wham play? Something to, they're clearly
Anything.
selling out all the way against this run. Do you run play action? How can you take advantage of them being over aggressive here? And there was absolutely no adjustment. I mean, Atlanta Roberts got a carry on 3rd and 1 from midfield. What the
It's
hell is
ridiculous.
that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. He hasn't had a carry. I don't know if he had a carry yet, but I don't think he has. I mean, and the thing that's so crazy is on that first Patriots touchdown, Edelman, you have a nice, sneaky little play there. Edelman runs in untouched.
Untouched. Yeah,
It's
for
like you couldn't have
any of you who
anything
look
else
back
like
at the
that.
highlights, see if you can find a Dory Jackson, number 25 on Tennessee. He's the one that's trying to cover the tight end on that play. And he is, Edelman is running by Adoree Jackson's left shoulder. Adoree's still staring at Tom Brady. Has no idea that Edelman has the ball, despite him being right next to
Right.
him.
I mean, they did that so well. And it's like, why wouldn't couldn't you just do that to Harry this time or something? You know? Like
Or
anything.
fake it. How about
Fake
that?
it. Anything. Like any and I mean, I want to get to that because overall, this game, I almost felt like Josh kind of mailed it home. After that first, you know, his first two drives, which are basically scripted plays, he had nothing. He had absolutely nothing. And I heard that he took an interview the day before the game. You know, I don't know if he's finally thinking he's gone or whatever, but he fucking mailed it home for this game,
I
play
don't
calling
know.
wise.
I don't know,
After
maybe.
those two drives, I mean, I knew the play. Once again, I said this a couple weeks ago. I knew what they were going to do on almost every play. If I know what's going to happen on almost every play, the defense sure as hell knows what's going to happen on every fucking play. And that's because it's too obvious what you're doing. Oh, they're going to run here off the right tackle. Oh, there it goes. Stopped. All right, they're going to play. It would be, you know, play action. Oh, hey, this would be a good time for play action because they're absolutely all in on the run and selling out on the pass. Oh, no, they run it right into eight man, you know, eight guys in the box that are just coming. No coverage, whatever. And it was, you know, you look at the Buffalo game, there was so much movement. There was so much shit going on behind the line of scrimmage to, you know, oh, are they going to hand it off? There's two, you know, you got James White and Rex Burkhead in the backfield. Does that mean they're running it? What's going on with that? Like all these different packages and, you know, different things to get, you know, the defense guessing a little bit. A lot of guys in motion. We didn't do almost any of that. There was none of that. There was no misdirection. And it was almost like Josh thought, oh, yeah, we can go. We're gonna line up and beat them. It's like we haven't been able to do that all year. We're not the team that can line up and beat you, which is showing you face. We gotta fucking, you know, we gotta kind of dance around a little bit. We gotta, you know, we gotta play that game of, you know, misconception and messing with them. And we completely blew that. We didn't have any of it.
Yeah, I understand. I do think that I understand. Yeah, a lot of those better play designs were on the first drive. The screen passes, the trick play they tried to run with the reverse
That was it. We didn't come back to a trick play. I mean, not that I care about that, but you know, second half, we were just lining up. All right, we're gonna try and run it. Oh, we can't run it. We're gonna just try and throw it. And it's like we haven't been able to throw it like that all year. Why did you just check to that now?
Yeah, it was a
It
very
was very
disappointing.
frustrating for me.
I think it was disappointing and frustrating for all of Patriots Nation out there with so many missed opportunities, such a close game, and
Lose by a point. I mean,
lose
it was
by a point.
2013, but you really lost by a point.
Yeah, that goddamn extra point. So we talked about this last week. The Titans had a kicker who had never played for them before going into this game, and the second extra point just freaking curved inside the goalpost on the right side. Was so close to missing. Oh, I wanted
Well,
that to
that's
happen.
the other thing about this team is you had a field goal kicker on their team that never kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
Would have been nice to put him in that situation. You know, our special teams are so good. Matthew Slater and what's it, Justin Bethel, are the best punt, you know, kick return or punt return whatever you want to call them, punt coverage guys, and they didn't even have an opportunity to do it.
Yeah, because he punted into the end zone twice.
So, you know, our strengths didn't work for us, and our deficiencies worked against us as much as they possibly could have.
Yeah. Titans go 2 for 2 in the red zone, converting to touchdowns. Patriots 1 for 3. Pats had more yards total and more yards per play. The time possession, as we mentioned earlier, was very similar, almost 50-50. The Pats gave up less than 100 yards passing, less than 6 yards per attempt, and they win the turnover battle until the very end. I don't count those last two plays. That was 15 seconds to go. And they still managed to lose with a couple crucial plays. You know, Shaq Mason penalty, 3 stops from the 1 yard line, Atlanta Roberts up the middle, Edelman dropping the pass on the final drive, Tannehill converts to Firkser on 2 third-and-10s, one of them for a touchdown, the other to extend the drive. Deion Lewis converts a 3rd-and-4 on the second to last drive, the one that took 7 minutes off the clock. Mike Vrabel runs 2 minutes off the clock off of penalties. Oh, yeah. Devin McCourty gets run over by Ryan Tannehill on 3rd-and-2 for an extra 4 yards. N'Keal Harry gave up on the route at the end of the first half. I mean, there's just so many times that they couldn't make the plays they needed to make. And this is the story of this team, 12-4 and already at home early January.
Yep.
So now they go into the offseason. Afterwards, Brady says, you know, it's highly unlikely, something to that effect, highly unlikely that he stops playing football.
Hopefully unlikely.
Okay. Well, he's not going to stop. He's not going to retire.
Definitely not after that.
Bob Kraft says that he hopes and prays Brady is back, and he has he said that when they were doing the negotiations in August, September last year, that Brady wanted to be able to be fully free this offseason to make whatever decision he wanted to make. Kraft says, you know, he's earned that after 20 years, which seems pretty nice and true. Brady doesn't know what he's going to do yet. We can talk about some possible landing spots for him. I mean, everybody's throwing out there. Tennessee and the Chargers. There's also Chicago, Indianapolis. I mean, we could take these one by one if you want.
No, I mean, I don't think he's... I mean, if he's moving, he's not going somewhere that Giselle doesn't want to. So I think Chicago, Indianapolis, all these colder than Boston places, not a chance.
You think that's what she cares about?
I don't think she wants to move to any of those. I don't think she wants to move to Middle America.
Chicago?
Not a chance in hell.
Chicago's the third biggest city in the country.
Nah, I don't think she wants to go there. And they already committed to Jabritzky. I mean, obviously.
That's stupid.
Do you think he wants to go play for the coaches? He's not going to go play for Matt Nagy.
Why not? Matt Nagy's a good offensive coach.
Nah, he's not going to go play for that guy.
He made Mitchell Trubisky throw like 35 touchdown passes.
He's definitely not going to Indianapolis.
Why?
I'll tell you that.
Frank Reich's a great offensive coach, too.
Nah, he's not going there.
Outstanding offensive line.
Tennessee, maybe, but I feel like they're going to go with the hot hand of who they got.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Tannehill is a free agent, and he's about, he was drafted in 2011. No, 2012. So he's 12 years younger than Brady, at least.
Right. I mean, it's like, What are you going to get, 2 years out of Brady or potential 10 out of this guy?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know how much longer you can expect him to play at this level, considering this is an extremely high level that he's playing at and completely different from how he's played his entire career.
There is the LA Chargers. I mean, that does make sense. I don't know if he wants to go play there. I mean, maybe.
So you're going to say that he doesn't want to play for Matt Nagy or Frank Reich, but he's going to go play for Anthony Lynn?
No, if Brady goes there, they'd probably fire Lynn. I feel like that's easier to do. Like, you're not going to take, Frank Reich's going to be in Indianapolis. I don't think Brady's going to go play for the people that got him suspended for 4 games.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't think he wants to play for Jim Mersey. Very good.
I don't think so. You know what I mean? Chicago, I thought Chicago would make sense, but there's a lot of people out there that are like, Chicago's so far away from a possibility. I'm like, okay, fine. I accept it.
What about Tampa?
Yeah, but
Tampa Bay, underratedly, had a really good defense this season. Offensively, they have
See Brady in those colors. I don't know if you, I mean,
colors,
I feel like
really?
they're too far. I don't think they suck.
They don't suck. This is what the point I'm trying to make is that they had a very good defense last year run by Todd Bowles. Bruce Arians is a beloved head coach and a really good offensive coach at that. Jameis Winston throws for over 5,000 yards this season. primarily because he's got Arians as his coach. I mean, he's a talented guy, but also Arians as his coach, and they have two of the top 12 wide receivers in the league.
Yeah, Mike Thomas, Goodwin.
Michael Thomas is not on that team.
No, no, not Mike Thomas. No. Mike Evans. Mike Evans, thank you.
Dude, you need to start drinking coffee. This name dropping is becoming a problem. But the Mike Evans, Godwin, they got O.J. Howard, who can't seem to do anything for them. But for some reason, I mean, if you put him in the Patriots offense, does he blow up? So if you put Brady down there, does O.J. Howard become a good player? That team could be really good if you put a competent quarterback on there.
Maybe.
Jameis threw 30 interceptions this season. Brady's never thrown – he hasn't thrown over 10 interceptions in like a decade.
Yeah, I know. I think Brady comes back.
I think he comes back too, and I think this is a leverage play. Like
it is.
In 20 years, this is pretty crazy. He's never been a free agent. He's never had autonomy. And now he's in a position where he can have – he's still a part of this team for the next 2 months and 10 days. We're recording this on Wednesday the 8th, and he doesn't become a free agent until the 18th, the start of the league season. He can have conversations with Kraft and Belichick and Casario and whoever he wants. He's still on the team. And he's probably going to tell him, look, maybe his big thing is he wants to get paid what he's worth. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
I think he wants 2 years.
Okay, whatever. But that hasn't been a big deal for him going back the last few contracts about what his cap number is or what his salary number is.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems to me that he's making a leverage play that is, look, you've been upgrading the roster in every area except things that directly affect my play, and you're expecting me to pick up the slack. And this has been going on for years.
Yeah.
Years and years. And he's like, look, give me some help. How about prioritizing my play and what the offense is able to do, and let's build something here. Stop just throwing me out there behind a patchwork offensive line with losers at wide receiver and a nothing running game. How about we do something here and I'll come back? And if you don't do that, then I'll go elsewhere and I'll get paid more money.
Yeah, I mean, the sad part is they've thrown resources at it.
Yeah, and they just suck at it.
They haven't been doing good. I think he wants, you know, there's some of that. I think he wants a reasonable – I don't think he wants to get burned in a deal. You know, he doesn't want to be the number 20th paid quarterback. I think that's part of it. I don't think money – you know, he doesn't need Dak, whatever, you know, Aaron Rodgers type money or, you know, multi. I think he wants like a two-year, you know, somewhere between around the $25 million range contract, and I think that's reasonable.
That's
a lot of people are saying Belichick won't pay it. I think he will. I think a lot of people are saying, "Oh, Brady's done. That's it. Belichick doesn't want him back." Who is Belichick going to get for cheaper? That's going to be even remotely as good. I looked at the quarterback market. There really isn't much. You want to take a chance in the draft? That's the whole thing. The whole organization has been trying to get away with is starting with somebody fresh that's not been there. That whole thing was, well, you have Tom Brady. Even if Tom Brady doesn't want to teach a guy or whatever, you still have this guy sitting behind him for a couple of years to learn the way it's supposed to go, the way it's supposed to look, at least. So I don't think they're just going to throw a rookie in there or Stidham in there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think Stidham would have made much of a difference in this game. I think he would have thrown he probably would have given the ball up once or twice, and that would have been the difference in that game. It would have been, I mean, Tannehill only turned the ball over once. He dropped a snap and he dropped a handoff. Or he fumbled the ball and he dropped a snap. So those are two turnovers that could have happened and could have changed the game. But they didn't. He luckily fell on him. But I feel like, you know, for Brady, you know, essentially there's a lot of coaches leaving. To some degree, he's starting over here because, you know, might be a new offensive coordinator, might be a new receivers coach, quarterbacks coach, whatever you want to call it, this, that, the other thing. But if he, you know, getting up and moving and starting over in another team and trying to figure out, you know, at least here, you know your offense, you know who your head coach is, you know how everything works, you have your parking spot, you know when you're, what is expected of you, all that stuff. And I know on another team, they'll probably cater to him a lot. But, I mean, you really want to – I don't know. I just feel like that's a lot to do at 43 years old.
Yeah.
I feel to go pick up somewhere else, to learn their offense, I mean, or to have to teach these guys your offense. I mean, look how hard it is for people to learn the offense here versus, you know, oh, you're going to go teach that to these other guys that have just, you know, look at, I mean, think about it. You're going, so imagine, I don't know what the Chargers offense is, but I know what's in, like, Seattle offense is nothing. You know, there's really not much to it. Imagine going to a place like that and trying to give Brady put in his offense. The receivers would be like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Right.
And part of that, I feel like if Josh does go, I feel like the offense will get easier. And I, you know, that's one of my gripes with Josh the past few years, or the, you know, basically the past decade, is, you know, I heard this thing that Charlie Weiss is, you know, he came from the Charlie Weiss offense, and Charlie Weiss came from whoever's offense before him. And Charlie Weiss's offense was difficult. It was about, you know, the playbook was like an inch thick. Once Josh got a hold of it, the playbook turned into 3 or 4 inches. And it's almost like Josh expects everybody to be as smart as a Wes Welker or a Randy Moss. And it's like, you're not getting that. You're not getting that fucking people. You're not getting those people. Those people aren't walking through the door every day. You have Edelman. He's a smart guy. But, you know, dial it fucking back, dude. Like, what are you thinking with some of these offenses? You know, these positional plays that you're running.
Yeah.
That your receivers have no fucking clue what's going on. You know, yeah, Randy Moss was arguably the smartest receiver ever. And that's like the offense we're running. It's like the Randy Moss offense. Like, oh, you can pick where you can go. And they're like, what? You know what I mean?
I understand. Yeah, there's a lot to go over with what you just said, but...
There is. But I think Josh is going.
I think Josh is going and should go.
And I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about a lot of... I think he's a great guy, great coach. It's been too long, and he's too much.
Maybe. This was... The reason I think Josh should go for himself is because... This season was really bad, this offense. They never made the adjustments they needed to make. He's still considered a really good head coaching candidate.
Which is ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he's got a long track record of doing really good stuff.
Yeah.
But if he were to come back next season, and whether Brady is here or not, things didn't improve offensively, his stock is going to continue to go down. And so he's really at a high point right now, and... That seems like a good time for him to jump ship, especially if you're Josh McDaniels, do you want to come back and coach a rookie quarterback next season? I don't think so.
No.
So you'd rather go to somewhere like Cleveland. I mean, it's the only coaching opening right now. You can maybe things will open up in the future, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
So you could go to Cleveland, and did you hear he's got an interview scheduled for Friday, and Cleveland just came out and said they're going to announce their new head coach on Saturday.
Oh, like, really? Go figure.
Like, that seems like a slam.
So they're lining that one up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to see Josh kind of go. I mean, his offense...
I don't think you should be.
I am. I really am.
What offensive coordinator are you going to get that's better than Josh?
I know. Well, no.
The best offensive coordinator for the last 15 years.
Part of the problem is our whole coaching staff has just been gutted.
Well, yeah. I mean, we should mention Joe Judge goes...
Joe Judge, that's insane.
...to the Giants head coach.
That is insane.
Why?
The guy coaches the receivers for the first year. They're probably the worst coached group in the goddamn league. And he gets a head coaching job. I know he's been a special teams coach for 8 years.
And he's only been the coordinator for less than that.
That's what. And he started coaching in like 2008.
Yeah. He's only 38.
So it's like, I don't know. Hey, if you want to be an NFL coach, better get in real fucking soon because they're just... They're just choosing anybody. I mean, that's the NFL. That's the New York Giants.
Yeah, well, good for them. They didn't choose Jason Garrett like it was reported.
He's their offensive coordinator, apparently.
Oh, my God. That's a mistake.
The two of them. How would Joe Judge? Like, he can't run it. Can he run a team?
Maybe. You don't know. I mean, can John Harbaugh run a team? Seems like it.
But I don't know. I don't know much about John Harbaugh's pedigree before that. But I know that Joe Judge... I know he was a special teams coordinator, but Joe Judge, as a special teams coordinator, was working with Bill Belichick, who probably had more of a hand in special teams than anybody other head coach in the league. And Bill Belichick spent tons of money on special teams. He was giving him the best special teams players.
That's true. Yeah.
So
Gostkowski's one of the highest paid kickers. The number of veterans that they bring back year in, year out, Brandon Bolden, Nate Ebner, Matthew Slater,
yeah.
Brandon King, on and on down the list. specifically targeted for special teams, where other teams like to use rookies.
He's got as much help at special teams coach as I think you could ever get. So,
maybe.
I mean, one thing too, just as an overall with the coaches and stuff, and, you know, we've been to 3 Super Bowls in a row. Went to 2017, we won, what is it? We won 2016, lost 2017, won 2018 seasons.
Yeah.
Right? That means you're picking 31 or 32 3 years in a row.
If
we've
you're
lost,
even allowed to pick.
Even if you're... Yeah, exactly. Which is extremely hard to get there 3 times in a row. And then you still make the playoffs the next year. We still made the playoffs this year. We've been picking low round, the lowest of low. We've had front office, scouts, coaches, every single year, handfuls of guys taken from our organization. We've literally just been gutted. And to still make the playoffs, I mean, it's funny. Everyone's like, oh, this is the end of the dynasty. Why? Because we didn't make the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Literally. We didn't make the AFC Championship for the first time in 10 years, and that's it? It's over?
8 years.
8 years, sorry.
Mm-hmm. But that's a good point. Eight years in a row, their first-round pick, if they've had one, has been 29 or later.
You know how hard it is to build a team like that when everybody else is just getting, you know, all these other, you know, just higher pick after higher pick. You're constantly at the back. You're constantly getting coaches and scouts taken from you, and you're still doing it. And everyone's like, oh, it's the end. It's like, wait a second. We had not much this year, a lot less than we realized, and a ton of injuries, and we still fucking get there. We still get to the playoffs. Yeah, we lose. It wasn't great. It's unfortunate, but it's like, you know, that's all it takes. Oh, the dynasty's over. They're not going to make it. They can't do it anymore. It's like we lost. We didn't go to the Super Bowl for the first. I mean, how many Super Bowls this decade? 5?
Mm-hmm.
6?
5.
It's like, what else do you want them to fucking do? They can't win it every goddamn year.
Yeah. Well, the rules don't apply to the Patriots. And that's why if you look at Drew Brees is a perfect example. A guy that's fighting with Brady for all the records.
Yeah, it's been to one.
He's been to one in his whole career.
And
that
they
was,
blow it
That
constantly.
Was over 10 years ago. Well, that was exactly
constantly
10 years
blow
ago.
It.
And how about Aaron Rodgers? He went to one, hasn't been back.
It's difficult. It shows difficult. How good they are. That's why I think it's so funny that everyone's like, oh, it's done. It's like, if Brady comes back, we'll be right there next year.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned the team being gutted. Like I said, they're taking those late draft picks every single year, and that's not just the first round. I know I mentioned that, but it's every round they pick at the end of the round.
Yeah.
And then they lose players in free agency, and really, they haven't hit on first-round picks since, like, Hightower.
No, and they...
It's been, like, Dominic Easley and Malcolm Brown, and, I mean, the list goes on with guys. Sony Michel, who have been disappointing. Isaiah Wynn's playing well now, but he had to sit out a year. And,
yep.
Yeah, it hasn't been that productive for them in the draft. They get draft
and
picks
even,
stripped
yeah,
for no
we
reason.
Didn't even, last year, we lost several free agents. We really didn't pick anybody up.
Well,
we picked up nobodies.
Did you see our salary cap? It was fucking against the roof.
I know. So this year, we have some salary room. We do have to sign Brady. I don't know how that's all going to work out. You've got a couple free agents. I know a few are going to walk. You got the big ones outside of Brady, Devin McCourty. Kyle Van Noy, Joe Tooney, you got Jamie Collins. I mean, those are the big ones. Then also, I think Butler is a restricted free agent, which I'm happy about, so we can retain him. Landon Roberts is a whatever.
Matthew
I mean, you
Slater.
Can probably get him cheap. Matthew Slater will probably sign back anyways.
He's 35.
I mean, yeah. That's true.
I hope he comes back, especially with us losing a special teams coordinator. If you get your special teams captain back, that would be
helps.
A huge boon.
I think Van Noy walks. I think he's going to get paid. I'd be surprised if we could pay him.
He's a heck of a player, but there are those weird players that Patrick Chung, Jamie Collins, Kyle Van Noy, the guys that play really well for Belichick and don't play well elsewhere. That would be nagging in the back of my mind if I was him.
It would be. That's. I think Jamie Collins comes back for a decent deal because of that.
Maybe.
Because he's like, I can play here. I know I can play here. I like the system. You know, I like Hightower. I like the defensive guys. Maybe I'll stay here. So we'll see what happens with that. McCourty said he wants to keep playing, and I feel like you can bring him back
on
a reasonable deal
this year.
Right.
I think he comes back.
I think he comes back for a, probably a little better deal than his brother.
Yeah, he should get paid more than his brother does. And
brother's getting like five. He'll probably. I mean, if he could come back on 7 or 8, I'd be pretty happy.
And the last thing I wanted to mention about Brady is that he's currently scheduled to count for $13.5 million against the cap next season.
Already.
And so, right. If you're able to extend him before, this has to happen before he becomes a free agent, otherwise that cap hit gets locked in. But if you're able to extend him beforehand, which is going to be difficult because I think he wants to see offers on the table from other teams. So that the legal team.
I don't know if he wants to.
I think he wants to hear numbers. And with that, that can only happen in the legal tampering period, which is the 48 hours before the league year starts. So there's going to be a pressure-packed 48-hour window where he's going to hear numbers from other teams, and the Patriots are going to have to move quickly. Otherwise, they lock in that $13.5 million cap hit, and then the extension becomes really hard to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it gets nerve-wracking for me. But it, with that number already on the books, it makes it more palatable to extend him, where you could push that cap hit off further into the future when maybe right. some of these larger salaries come off the books, like a Devin McCourty, like a Jason McCourty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Hightower will get to the end of his deal. Hopefully Gilmore gets extended and that number can come down. But Gilmore counts for $18 million against the cap next season. I say extend him now.
I do too. I think so. But that's, so we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to get to, who are you rooting for in the rest of the way? The final eight teams. I go back and forth about a lot of these things. I'm a little partial to the Vikings. I
think the Vikings is I kind of want the Vikings just because they were seem like a hot team. You know my views on Kirk Cousins.
I know.
The Saints, though, man, I mean, they're just the jokeaholics. I mean, it almost lessened the blow that we lost because the Saints lost.
I know.
I mean, the Saints had everything going for them. They're 13-3. They have that unstoppable offense. They have a good defense. They have these, you know, great players on defense. Not, you know, they're not the best defense, but they just got guys that make plays. And then what happens? They lose.
They lose.
They go into overtime again. And they lose.
Yeah.
They can't do it.
And they were fortunate to get that game into overtime. And what was funny, I think we were talking about this during the game, was Drew Brees wasn't even the best quarterback on his own team in that game.
No. And you know, everyone's shitting on Brady for this, that, and the other thing. Brees couldn't throw the ball.
I know. That's the thing. We'll get into that more as we do more episodes this offseason.
And got strip sacked.
I know. We'll go into more about the 2019 Patriots, but also looking into the offseason. And I think it's far more likely the Saints don't bring back Drew Brees than the Patriots don't bring back Brady. No one's talking about it.
No one's talking about it.
It's
not even a
story.
They have
options. They have Teddy Bridgewater in the building, and Taysom Hill is on the roster for the next year.
Yeah.
Those guys are both like legit quarterbacks, way more so than Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Seattle's game, you know, Philly just didn't have anything. They just couldn't do anything. At least offensively, and Houston pulled it out. I was surprised they pulled it out. That was a good win for their organization. Buffalo had them on the ropes the whole time, and they ended up coming out.
Dude, they didn't. Buffalo fumbled that game away. Josh Allen made bizarre decisions in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, however, yeah, pretty much. So, for Minnesota to go into San Fran, I think would be ridiculous. I don't think they can do it, but it's happened.
Yeah, the good news for the, I think that game has an over-under at 44.5 right now. I don't see how that game gets to 44 points. San Francisco's defense is outstanding. Minnesota's offense is virtually one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And the Vikings' defense is playing better than ever. They're going to be able to control the game. Their weakness is against the passing game, and the Niners' strength is in the running game. So I think that's strength on strength. I don't see this being in a high-scoring game like the 17-16 17-13, that type of ring.
Right. I think so, too. I think San Fran should pull that out, but we'll see. Tennessee at Baltimore is a really interesting one. I mean, I'd love to see Tennessee go in there and just run the ball like they did and do it. But, you know, the thing about Baltimore, it's got me nervous about them, is as explosive as they are and well-timed they are, they've taken, like I said, I think I said it a couple weeks ago, now this is 3 weeks off of them not playing football. That's a lot. That is a long time to not play football in a cold weather game in Baltimore. They could come out, they could be flying, ready to go, ready to roll, maybe. But, I mean, we've seen a few times before where those teams come out, they rest guys in week 16, and they're just not ready to go. Players are getting injured left and right. They can't get anything going, and it's like, well, you shouldn't have fucking rested that long. It takes them like a full half just to get acclimated to playing football again.
Yeah, that could happen. I think this has a chance to be one of the fastest games of the season. Just like both teams like to run the ball a ton, and it's just the game's going to go by in like 2 hours.
You're right.
Except for all the commercials.
That's a good one Saturday night. That'll be exciting. Houston at Kansas City. I think Houston has a chance.
I
really don't think Kansas City has looked good this year. I thought they looked pretty bad. I don't know how they got to the position they're in.
If I'm going to take a team that I think is most likely to make the Super Bowl, it's the Chiefs.
What?
I think it's going to be Chiefs-Niners.
Whoa.
Yeah.
No way, Chiefs.
I'm not rooting for it. Like I said, I'm rooting for the Vikings, but
I haven't been too impressed with they're one of those teams that think they've won everything and yet they've won nothing. And those teams I don't think usually get very far.
Fair enough.
They have this attitude like, "Oh, we're the best." It's like, "You haven't won shit. You lost last year to the road game." Now, I don't think they lose to the road game this year again. But I'd love to see Houston's – I mean, I feel like Houston's offense should be able to open up pretty well against the Chiefs' defense.
Houston and beat the Chiefs earlier this season.
And Andy Reid, good God, with his clock management, that can always screw them.
Yeah, we will see.
And then Seattle at Green Bay might be the best game of the weekend.
I think it's going to be the worst game of the weekend.
You think it's going to be the worst game of the weekend?
It might be the closest. I'll give it the closest. But –
yeah.
Seattle always plays fun games. Seattle's kind of like New England in that way. That the game is, it's always interesting.
It's always a good game.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Green Bay, it's like you haven't seen them in the playoffs in the first round bye in years.
Doesn't just feel like Seattle never deserves to win and then Russell Wilson makes like 4 or 5 plays that completely turn the game?
Pretty much.
That guy's special. Okay. Well, we'll be back to talk more about this Patriots team this season and looking into the offseason. But for now, just be happy that they made it to 8 consecutive championship games, 5 Super Bowls over the last decade, and 3 rings. And so for now, enjoy some stress-free football this weekend. Root for the team of your choosing. And thank you all for listening.
Adios.
All right, see you.